taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans. You've joined the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free, and if you follow me for any length of time, you know words mean things. And the understanding of the definition of words, it's important. And I think one of the biggest problems we have in our society today is we're often using the same words, but we mean drastically different things. So I want to take some time today and look at some news articles where, let's say the words or the reinterpretation of words is having an impact, a bad impact. Let's start with this article out of the Tennessee Star. There's a medical journal that calls whiteness a parasitic-like condition. Now, that kind of got my attention. Now, this is from an article by a Dr. Donald Moss. He's a faculty member at both the New York Psychoanalytic Institute and the San Francisco Center for Psychoanalysis. And in this, he says that being white is malignant and a parasitic-like condition with no permanent cure. Now, the term malignant means tending to produce death, something that's evil in nature, influence, or effect. So here we have Dr. Moss claiming that he himself, because if this picture is correct, he is a white man, is leading towards death simply because of the amount of melanin in his skin. He also claims that it's a parasitic-like condition, meaning that it lives off of another organism. Now, I find that absolutely amazing, because when I look at history and I look at men and women like George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Sigmund Freud, I don't see them being a parasite on society simply because of the color of their skin. No, what I see as a parasite on society is people like Dr. Moss, who once using the system to obtain some level of success. I mean, if he's employed on two different, if he's, you know, faculty member at two different centers on opposite coasts, this obviously man has gotten some success, who now claims that no one else who is white should have that success because they're a parasite. I'm sorry, Mr. Moss. I don't know that you've earned that title, doctor. At least not in my mind. It is you who are the parasite. It is you who are the racist, because you're claiming that you are evil simply because you're white. And I find it absolutely laughable that this man is claiming that there's no cure for him being white. Well, then what the heck are you talking about, doctor? But you see, this is the importance of words. You see, the doctor is not using words to explain or to inform. He's using it to malign, to damage, to take down, and to avoid controversy, to avoid challenge, I guess would be a better term. In other words, the idea being is by calling someone racist because of the color of their skin, he's trying to inoculate himself from people like me who will say, no, you're the one judging people by the color of their skin. You are the racist. And it's become quite obvious that those without an actual argument simply devolve into calling people names. Name calling seems to be the last resort for someone who really doesn't have an argument at all. And this is just the first in many examples. Let's take a look at another one here. This one actually comes from the Biden administration. He has a strategy. He has a strategy to combat domestic terrorism. Okay, how is he going to do that? Well, according to this report, and I found this out of the Daily Caller, what is his strategy? Well, it seems to be focused on this thing called white supremacy. However, again, the meaning of words, according to Joe Biden, everybody who disagrees with him is a white supremacist. I mean, that happens to be the outcome. That is what he has said over and over again. It's not that you actually declare that white people are better than others. In fact, I find it laughable that people like Kamala Harris, who don't think black people can figure out how to get an ID, or Joe Biden, who thinks it's too difficult for black people to get an ID, yet they call other people white supremacists. Really? How about the myriad of CRT supporters that say it's too difficult for black people to actually do basic math and say 2 + 2 = 4, or show up to work on time, or do a good job to expect an outcome? That's too difficult for them. Is that not the white supremacist viewpoint? But again, white supremacist is a label, and it's designed to avoid any critical thought. The assumption being is once you call someone a white supremacist, they'll curl up and go away. That's exactly what the bully wants. The bully wants to call you names and have you curl up in a fetal position and beg for mercy. Well, the way you deal with that type of bully is you stand up and say, prove it. Prove it, you racist. This is the same Biden who wants to set up a loan forgiveness program that barred white people from participating. This is the racist. Does he think that white people don't need the help? He's the white supremacist. And it's about time the American people stop letting these liars use this language unchallenged. See, that's the importance of words. Words communicate things, and if we aren't using the same definition, or if we allow the definition to be corrupted, well, then how do we communicate? If we are going to declare domestic terrorism, basically anybody who disagrees with the government, just look at the reaction to the January 6th debacle. You know, did people enter the Capitol? Yes, they did. Was some damage done? Yes. Were some rather embarrassing pictures taken? Absolutely. Does that make them terrorists? Well, apparently the only people they're terrorizing are those in Congress, whether it's Nancy Pelosi, who can't wait to put a commission together to go after these people, to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who apparently wet her pants, even though she wasn't even in the same building. See, the use of these terms, you know, terrorism and white supremacy, are meant to stifle debate and prevent challenge. Because if you can make a statement without being challenged, well, then you own not only the mindset, but you own the direction. You know, 2 + 2 = 5 makes a lot of sense until someone points out that no, it doesn't. And no linguistic ledger domain is going to change that. So when I see articles like this, when I hear people talk like this, this is what grabs my attention. It's why I am so thankful that I learned to care about the meaning of words. And I thank my father for part of that. My father was an editor and a businessman, and he was forever correcting my grammar. It drove me nuts as a child. But when I grew up and I realized the importance of understanding words and applying the proper definition to them, well, I thank him for that work. And when I see people like this Dr. Moss or the President Biden abuse the English language for political purposes, it makes me mad. And again, I think it's time the American people stop letting others rewrite the English language simply because we don't want to ruffle anyone's feathers. We don't want to challenge them. We're afraid of being called names. Well, you know what? Right now I'm getting called names all the time. Let's face it, folks, right? Well, as a child, we learned, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Words only hurt when we let them hurt. Or at least words only control us when we let them control us. So when Biden refers to people like me as domestic terrorists because I challenge the legitimacy of an election with evidence of fraud, That's his problem. See, he's trying to paint me. He's trying to get you to think about me a certain way by using those terms, regardless of whether there's any evidence of that. That's the danger. Because what happens after we start rewriting words to impugn people's character? Well, what happens is another article about Mr. Biden. See, in a teleconference, he had all these wonderful words, and a senior administration official said they want to improve public awareness of federal resources to address concerning and threatening behavior before violence occurs. Ooh, sounds good, doesn't it? He said it involves creating contexts in which those who are family members or friends or coworkers know that there are pathways and avenues to raise concerns and seek help for those who they've perceived to be radicalizing and potentially radicalizing towards violence. What do those words mean? What makes someone a radical? Well, according to the Biden administration, a radical is anybody who disagrees with them. Anybody who uses their freedom of speech to question what is being done, to look at the Constitution and call the government out when it violates the law, to call the people out who are violating their oath of office, that's considered radical. Well, you know what, Mr. Biden? If that's your definition of radical, I'm all for it. The very idea that the American people are cowards crumbling under the weight of government, willing to rat out their friends because they disagree with the government, that is radical. We've fought wars against that, Mr. President, and no administration has legitimate authority to tell people that they're not allowed to disagree with government. We can disagree all we want, Mr. President, up until the point that we actually use violence. However, more often than not, it is not the people complaining about the government that are actually the ones committing violence. No, it's the ones that want to destroy this government. It's the ones that want to destroy America. It's the BLM. It's the Antifas of the world. It's those who challenge certain international organizations that come in and loot and pillage and destroy. They are the ones committing violence, Mr. President. What are you doing about those? The answer is nothing. Now, in many cases, it's not the federal government's domain, but even where it is, what are you doing? That's what I want to know. See, the whole idea of radical is to put a picture in your mind that these people are, well, they're out there, they're radical, when in many cases what they really are traditional. They are exercising the traditions of public discourse, exercising their right. And for those who have little foundation to base their position on, that's scary. So these words matter. Because if they can redefine radical to be anybody who disagrees with what, Dr. Fauci? Suddenly, if you look at the data coming out of the CDC and you compare it to what Dr. Fauci says and what this guy and recognize that what this guy is saying is ridiculous, suddenly you're radical, and that may tend towards violence, then they can, well, you can get your friends and your neighbors and even your family to turn you in. Does anybody else recognize this? Does anybody see this in the Soviet Union? Or in Nazi Germany? Or in any Marxist, socialist, Maoist country? Are we really so close? Are the American people willing to give up all their rights and liberty to throw free speech and freedom of thought on the ash pile of history because some demented old man in the White House says they're radical ideas? Really? Is it any wonder that when tyrannies take over, one of the first things they try to shut down are the freedom of speech and of the press? to prevent people from communicating ideas. And often, how do they do it? They don't do it by claiming that free speech is suddenly evil. Oh, no, no, no. Suddenly, certain speech is dangerous. It's radical. Now, let's ignore what those words actually mean. We use them for their emotional content. We start describing others with words that sound scary, like parasites and malignant. We refer to things we disagree with labels we know will generate bad feelings, like white supremacy or domestic terrorism. But the good news is, just because somebody in government says it, doesn't make it true, and doesn't mean it has power. See, these words only have power over you if you let them. There's a proverb in Scripture, Proverbs 18:17, says, "The first one to plead his cause seems right, until his neighbor comes and examines him." So when we hear this rhetoric, when we hear these words, these over-the-top statements, let's let our neighbors examine them. When we hear people refer to whiteness as a parasite or as a malignancy, well, let's examine that. Let's recognize that these are people that are judging based on race. These are racists. Are we really surprised that racists have racist ideas? That racists view everything based on race? That's why words matter. When people in an administration refer to those who disagree with them as domestic terrorists, well, let's examine that. Let's let our neighbor examine that and see that what they're really trying to do is justify their own violence against those who disagree with them. That they see those who disagree with them as a lethal threat, not to their physical bodies, but to their power. And when administrations ask their fellow citizens to turn in those who have been, quote-unquote, radicalized, understand, to them, radical is anyone who disagrees with them. Our founding fathers would be radical to Joe Biden and the current Democratic Party. For that matter, they'd be radical to the current Republican Party as well. See, words have power over us when we let them. But when we take the time to examine, to view it from another viewpoint, to examine the words that are being chosen and why, and what's the purpose, we don't see powerful men and women. We don't see men and women that are trying to protect us or to do what's best for us. No, no. We see weak-minded, weak-willed bullies looking to use words to avoid examination of their own assumptions, their own agenda, their own point of view. Now, I'm sure if I were to ask Dr. Moss, he would decry the idea that he's a racist, even though he's judging people based on race and encouraging others to do so as well. But you see, that's the painful part of examining the meaning of the words that are being said. When a member of the Biden administration talks about people being domestic terrorists, what do you mean? Can you give me an example? Let's not let these terms just live out there. Because if we allow their meaning to change based on who's listening to them, well, they become very dangerous indeed. You see, you may look at it and say, yeah, well, you know, domestic terrorists, that's dangerous. Anybody that wants to come in and bomb us, you know, I don't care if they're foreign or domestic, that's bad. We should see them as a potential lethal threat. But when the term domestic terrorism is used for anyone who disagrees with an administration, well, that becomes very dangerous indeed. See, words are important because words have meanings. And for the most part, those words have meanings that are agreed to by the vast majority of the people who speak the English language. So when a few people try to rewrite the meaning of those words to their own agenda, they are not attempting to communicate. They're attempting to manipulate. They are using words as political weapons. Again, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. That works if I understand that while the words, I might find them emotionally painful, they do me no physical harm unless I let them. Words are important. I love words. I've come to love words. That's why you see me refer so often to the dictionary, especially lately, Webster's 1828 dictionary. I want to use the words as our founding fathers recognize those words. I want to understand what they said because by understanding the words that they used and what they thought they meant. This is the true way to study the Constitution and understand its meaning. It's not that hard. Most of the words we use mean exactly the same thing now as they did 245 years ago. And the words that don't, well, it's easy to find the difference. It's easy to go and find those original definitions. But if we don't do it, who will? Are you going to trust a political party or a certain administration to define words for you? Are you going to trust certain quote-unquote experts to define words for you? Are you going to let those in a political party define words for you, or academicians or medical doctors? See, part of the problem is we have gotten in the habit of letting so-called experts define words for us, which puts them in control. It's about time we start making those who claim to be speaking for us and speaking in public use the right words, the accurate words, the words that actually have the meanings that we all agree on. And if you cannot describe your opponent, whether that be a physical opponent or a conceptual opponent, whether you cannot find those, when you cannot define those who disagree with you in any way other than by calling them names, that tells me something very important. It tells me your argument is weak. You're the bully who has no strength. And all it takes to stop you is for people to refuse to submit, to not sit back and let the bully have their way. Now, before I head out to break, I want to remind you, we're getting closer. We are within 1 month of my Knowing Your Rights tour. Right now, I'm going to be up in North Dakota. I'm in Grand Forks, Killdeer, and Bismarck, North Dakota. It's August 12th through the 15th or 16th. Find out more. Go to constitutionstudy.com/tour, and you'll find out where I'm going to be. I'm also going to be in Thermopolis and Douglas, Wyoming on this trip. Now, you can find where I'm going to be and when I'm going to be. And if you're in the area, I would love to meet you. I'd love to shake your hand and have a nice talk with you. But if I'm not going to be in your area, don't worry. Go to the bottom of that page and you'll find a form and you can ask that I come and speak at you at your event. It doesn't have to be a big event. It doesn't have to be a large venue with some organized event. All it has to be is a group of people that are willing to sit down and talk and learn about the Constitution. See, when I talk about knowing your rights, I'm talking about going and defining what is a right. What are we defending? Where is it defended? How is it defended? And here are the original documents that prove my point. Because the words that are used, they have meaning. And sadly, too much of society is letting that meaning slip. And every time they do, our grasp on reality, our grasp on our liberty, our grasp on our future becomes weaker and weaker and weaker. And if you don't want to get weak, you really got to learn to take care of yourself. Now, my wife's always picking on me about taking vitamins. She's got a whole list of vitamins she wants me to take. And I don't know about you. It's not a lot of fun. But, you know, she's my wife, and I know she cares. She wants me to be healthy. So we've been trying products from Healthy Cell. It was relatively new to us. I hadn't heard of it before. But it's pretty cool. See, what I didn't realize is that most vitamins, well, they haven't been upgraded or changed since back in the 1930s. And being that we eat so much processed food, and even the fresh food that we grow has so many fertilizers and hormones and stuff, it really doesn't provide the nutrition that food did when my grandparents were alive. So Healthy Cell has come up with a way to, one, make taking vitamins easier while giving your body, the cells of your body, what they need so that you can sleep better, stay focused, have more energy, and generally ward off the ills and diseases that float around us day in and day out. Now, as an America Out Loud listener, Healthy Cell will give you 20% off your very first order. Just go to healthycell.com/outloud. You can try any of their products. You can try the REM Sleep or the Focus and Recall. Me, I've been using the Immune Super Boost. I take one packet a day with my breakfast, and it helps keep my body strong, helps you ward off all those bugs and diseases. And trust me, with COVID going around, that was a really nice thing to recognize that even though my chances of actually catching COVID were fairly low, I made them even lower by taking care of myself. So again, go to healthycell.com/outloud for 20% off your first order. Give that Immune Super Boost a try. Walk around confident that you stand a better chance of fighting off whatever disease you may encounter by using the Immune Super Boost from healthycell.com.
Because of COVID-19, the average American worries about their immune health 4 times a day. That's 112 times per year. To minimize the worries, leading nutritional supplement company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost, an immune supplement that contains 15 full doses of science-backed nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea, all in a one-a-day pill-free gel pack. It tastes great, is convenient on the go, and it's more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Supporting a strong and resilient immune system can be simple. Go to healthycell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Immune Super Boost. That's healthycell.com, HEALTHYCELL, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
The America Out Loud family is comprised of patriots in the true sense of the word. We know that if America fails, the world will fail. It is incumbent upon us to carry the torch for liberty and the Constitution to help save America for future generations to come. AmericaOutLoud.com. It's a fight for the soul of humanity.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution study. We are reading and studying the Constitution. Today, we're looking at words, the importance of words, the importance of understanding the meaning of words, recognizing when they're being manipulated to manipulate you, and how we can fight against it, how we can stand up against those who are trying to use words to get us to sit down and shut up, when what we really need to do is stand up and point to their problems. So I'm looking here at another article, this one again from the Tennessee Star, about a Michigan professor. There was an anti-racist pedagogy symposium. Now, I have to say, I love the word pedagogy. It's one of those $3 words you throw out when you want to seem like you're really smart, and all it really means is the science of teaching. So there was a symposium about anti-racist pedagogy in which an April Parker Bell, associate professor of language, literacy, and English education at Michigan State University, argued that the idea of standard, quote unquote, standard English among teachers is racist. that it diminishes the quote-unquote black language. Now again, if everything in your life is based on race, who's the racist? And let's face it, the English language came out of England. I hate to tell you this, folks, but yeah, you know what? England was originally populated with, was it African people? No. Was it Asian people? No. But does that make the English language racist because the language was based out of England? No. And in fact, the very idea that there's black English and white English is itself racist. Now, don't get me wrong. There's plenty of dialects. There's plenty of, we tend to call them accents, where the English language is mangled based on a geographic use. But the English language is no more racist than the Chinese language or the Russian language or the German language or the Swahili language. No, this is just another example of a professor trying to shut down disagreement by calling something racist. The very idea that if you want to learn to fly an airplane, just because the airplane works based on certain rules doesn't make those rules racist. If you want to be an engineer, the fact that, you know, certain engineering principles always must be followed doesn't make them racist. So deciding that a language is racist because its rules of construction you don't want to follow, well, that's nuts. And in fact, the very idea that you think that language should bend to your will, well, that makes you a narcissist. And the very idea that you assume that the only reason why language is structured a certain way is because of the color of your skin, that makes you the racist. So, Baker Bell, try to get your name right, Ms. Baker Bell, I really don't care whether or not you think it's racist because you've just proven to me that you are the racist, that you think the entire world, including the English language, should rearrange itself the way you want. You know, I remember I was in high school and I had a teacher that insisted on pronouncing the word Washington with an R in it. As I said, I grew up with an editor as a father. My English and my grammar, my pronunciation were corrected constantly. So when I pointed out to this particular teacher that there's no R in Washington, well, he said, well, that's the way I pronounce it. That's fine. It's wrong. But you're welcome to do it. The same way that, you know, just because somebody with a math degree tries to convince you that 2 + 2 = 5 for very large instances of 2, well, that doesn't make it true, makes the man an idiot. So when we see people trying to turn everything into racist, including the English language, they're the racists. And what they're trying to do is to manipulate you and use boogie scary words to prevent you from challenging them. So when someone uses the language incorrectly, the idea of, ooh, correcting them would be racist. Are you telling me that blacks are incapable of learning the English language? Of understanding its grammatical structure? Are you telling me that the pedagogy of instruction on the English language is not sufficient for the black population? Because to me, that sounds not only racist, it sounds white supremacist. Again, words matter. And when I see people like Ms. Baker Bell using words as weapons, I first have to recognize they have no power against me. Because when I look at the other side and I examine the argument that she is making, I recognize something very important. You know, again, from Scripture, Jesus said that, you know, how can you take the speck out of your brother's eye when you have a beam in your own? And I can think of no better description for the people like Ms. Baker Bell and others who assume everything is racist and can't see the fact that they themselves are the racists. Before you start picking at the speck in other people's eyes, you better take a look at the plank in your own. And before I give you the authority, the power to tell me how to live my life, to tell me why, you know, tell me that I judge people based on race because I use the English language the way it is properly constructed, I really don't care, Ms. Baker Bell. It is not the fact that you use English language differently that I have a problem with. I don't mind. As long as people can understand, it's not something I'm gonna make a big deal out of. But when you tell people that you must dumb stuff down, that you can't teach the proper English language because it's racist, that doesn't make people smarter. That makes people dumber. And it also makes them more easily subject to being led around by the nose by people like Ms. Baker Bell. So when I examine the other side, I see this is not about race. This is not about the English language. This is about manipulation and control. On to another news article. I found this one in One News Now. The Department of Justice is suing the state of Georgia, at least according to Attorney General Merrick Garland. Now, why are they doing this? Well, from the announcement, quote, "Our complaint alleges that recent changes to Georgia's election laws were enacted with the purpose of denying or abridging the right of the black Georgians to vote on account of their race or color in violation of Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act." That's scary, right? I would be, boy, if the Georgia election laws were enacted to deny people of color the right to vote, that's a problem. There's just one problem, Mr. Attorney General. Where's your evidence? I mean, all the rhetoric aside, where is your proof? Now, Georgia is one of several states that have been enacting laws to secure their vote, to make sure that the people voting are the ones who are supposed to be voting, that they only get to vote once, to make it harder to commit fraud, and in many cases make it easier to vote, just harder to commit fraud. But here we have the Attorney General of the United States with as yet no evidence using the not insignificant power of the Department of Justice, the power, the funds available, your tax dollars, to sue Georgia because of what I've seen so far, an absolutely baseless accusation that the new voting laws are racist. I hear lots of whining and crying and people screaming about it. I have yet to see any evidence of it. You know, you can call this Jim Crow all you want. You can call it racist all you want. You have to have proof. Now, most of this seems to revolve around this idea of voter ID. Now, it's quite simple. Where I live in Tennessee, when I go to vote, I show them my ID. It has my picture on it. It has my information on it so that they know that when they look up registered voter Paul Engel, that I'm the actual person, Paul Engel, that's voting. Is that really that much to ask? So what could possibly be racist about voter ID laws? Well, the only thing possibly racist about voter ID laws is your belief that people of color have a hard time getting IDs. That for some reason, black people, Asian people, brown people, they can't get voter. They have a hard time getting a voter ID, which I find absolutely amazing considering the number of black and Latino people I see on the road with driver's licenses. I find it astoundingly racist to think that getting an ID is more difficult for a black person than for a white person. Now, Mr. Garland, if you have actually any evidence of that, by all means, that should be prosecuted. Maybe not by the feds, maybe it should be done by the states, but absolutely. But the idea in your twisted little mind that the acquiring an ID card is more difficult, it's nigh on impossible for Black people, that the only reason people would implement a voter ID requirement is racist, proves to me that you're unworthy of that office because you, sir, are a racist. Let me rephrase that, because I really don't think that Mr. Garland believes that voter ID laws are racist. I'm sure he's a relatively intelligent person. No, I think what it is that this shows to me that Mr. Garland is more than willing to put political party above the truth, above the law, and above his oath of office. That's why he's unqualified for that office. He is trying to use his position as Attorney General to intimidate first one state, and I'm sure there'll be more, if they dare to implement policies that are contrary to the Democratic political platform. Remember how many people were all upset with President Obama when he threatened, South Carolina, that if they didn't implement transgender bathroom accommodations, that they would lose school aid, they'd lose the Department of Education funds? Is this really any different? This is blackmail. This is intimidation. This is why understanding words and examining the words and their meaning is so important. See, we all know what racism is. We all know what voter IDs are. And if you're telling me that a Black person can't get a photo ID, I think the problem's in your head. But again, when we examine the other side, when our neighbor explains things to us, what do we see? No, I see an attorney general and a presidential administration that is willing to use the power of their office to bully people and bully states into giving up their rights. Georgia, I pray you do not fold. And I pray no state folds. In fact, I pray that these states start realizing just how evil and corrupt this whole process is, and they start taking actions to protect themselves from it. It's about time the Department of Justice be warned that until you have evidence of a crime, evidence of a violation of the Voting Rights Act, you come to Georgia and investigate, you harass our people, we'll throw you in jail. Now, that's taking nullification to the next level. But that may be what it takes. See, when you have people lying and misusing words to intimidate others, well, you have to stand against it. We have to stand up to these bullies. So if you're in Georgia, pass this information along to your state representative, to your governor. You want more information, I'm more than willing to help. But if we allow a presidential administration to rule with an iron fist, we have no one to blame for but ourselves when they come for us. This is the importance of language. It helps you disarm the rhetoric, and it helps you recognize when you need to stand against the rhetoric. Now, this next one, I'm like, you know, I really wish these people would learn the English language. I found this article, this one came out of the Epoch Times. The National Archives calls the Rotunda structurally racist. I'm trying to figure out how a building is racist. A report from the National Archives finds that their own rotunda, the National Archives rotunda, where we find our founding documents, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, is a symbol of structural racism. Wow. How can documents that have been used to lift people up, documents that led to the first country to pass legislation barring the slave trade. England enacted theirs first, but we passed the legislation first. A document that led people to fight to end slavery in this country. A document for which racism and Jim Crow are the antithesis. They are a violation of that, those precious documents. Yet they are marked as structurally racist. They want to put trigger warnings. You want to trigger warnings? Warning, you might feel patriotic if you read these documents. Warning, you may realize that those people running your government in your name are complete blithering idiots. Because they look at those things and see racism. When I read words like all men are created equal, yeah, I recognize that all men were not treated equal in 1776. They weren't treated equal in 1787. They weren't even treated equal in 1863. But the idea, the words that all men are created and equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. How can you look at those words and see racist? Because you have a plank and you have a billboard in your eye. Now, America is not perfect. We've never been perfect. We never will be perfect. But the idea that these words that have lifted men out of slavery, out of subjugation, and into liberty and freedom, words that said it was wrong to have separate but equal, that was wrong to allow lynch mobs to go without punishment, that it was wrong for states, by the way, democratically run states, to enact laws for segregation. And you find those racist? It was the very idea that these documents say that's wrong that helped us get rid of that stuff. How can you be a member of the National Archives and hate the nation that you're keeping the archives of? This is not a display of structural racism. This is a display of national hatred, of this academic stupidity that assumes everything evil about this country and fails to recognize anything good about this. This is disgusting, but this just shows the rot that is at the heart of especially the federal government, but many of our state governments as well. The absolute moral, ethical, and intellectual rot. I truly do not know how to deal with this. I mean, you talk about being educated into imbecility. This has got to be one of the most ridiculous statements I've heard coming out of any government. I mean, this is right up there with some of the stuff that comes out of AOC's mouth or Ilhan Omar. How do you look at this country and hate it so much? And if you hate it so much, why do you work at the National Archives? But truly, I don't believe the people in the National Archives hate this country. I truly believe what this is cowardice. Pure, yellow-bellied cowardice. This is nothing more than pandering to what they hear people saying in the intellectual elites. Oh, everything's structurally racist. Well, we have to be structurally racist too. We don't care if it makes sense. We don't care if it's logical. We don't care if it's reasoned. We don't even care if it fits the definition of the words. This is cowardice. You want to fix what's wrong in this country, you have to start with what's really wrong with this country. And right now, the biggest problem I see in this country is a nation of cowards that look at this and say, okay, we're supposed to be the home of the brave. Can I see this? Coward. Trigger warnings. Trigger warnings. What? Warning, you may be exposed to liberty and it may scare you? The concept of freedom and self-ownership and self-responsibility, where they're going to make you wet your pants? How cowardly must we be to allow these idiots that truly hate and despise freedom and liberty, the fact that other people may disagree with them and are willing to allow that to infect everything, including the rotunda of the National Archive. It makes me wonder if America's lost. Was George Washington right? Has the experiment in self-government failed? The sacred fire of liberty that was left to the hands of the American people, have we truly put it out? If the National Archive is going to put trigger warnings up because the documents scare them, how do you look with a straight face at that and not just laugh at its stupidity? And a perfect example of this imbecilic reaction, imbecilic thought process, comes from the media and many Democrats. They are having a conniption fit. Why? Well, you see, Texas passed a law called the Texas Heartbeat Act, and it bans abortions once the baby's heartbeat can be detected, and it gives Americans the right to sue abortion clinics or individuals who help mothers obtain abortion in the state. Now, the media's gone apoplectic, and many Democrats, they refer to this law as like the Taliban or the Handmaid's Tale. You've got to be kidding me. Outlawing murder is not like the Taliban? For every one of those media figures and Democrats that compared this to the Taliban, I dare them to go move to Afghanistan. Try the Taliban out. See which one is worse. We are all endowed by our Creator with the right to life. And it's government's job to protect that right. That's its first job. That's its primary job. So when Texas passes a law that says, listen, if there's a heartbeat, well, there's a life. And science proves that that life is separate from the mother. It's inside the mother, but it is a separate life, its own DNA. But you want to murder that. And you're saying that not allowing murder is like the Taliban? Isn't it kind of the other way around? Isn't it the Taliban that goes around murdering people that don't toe the line with their view of the world? Where challenges to their religious opinions are a death sentence? No, it's the media and Democrats that are more like the Taliban than the legislators in Texas who said, you know what? Once we can hear the baby's heartbeat, then we know it is alive. Therefore, you cannot murder it. The dystopian show, The Handmaid's Tale. Give me a break. No one is strapping women down to make them get pregnant. No one. I'm sorry, ladies, but if you cannot keep your legs closed and you cannot take appropriate measures to avoid pregnancy, that doesn't mean you get to murder the consequence of your bad decisions. We have consequences for our actions. But you see, they want to use the word Talibanism because they want to scare you. They want you to think we're turning into a third world country. Yet it's actually them that are trying to turn us into a third world country. And one more time, very briefly, the State Department wants to change the rules so that people can choose their own gender on their passport. Now, again, words matter because when you apply for a passport, it doesn't ask for your gender. It asks for your sex. Why is that important? Because Merriam-Webster defines sex as either of the two major forms of individuals that occur in many species and that are distinguished respectively as male or female. Now, this is different than gender, which may mean sex, but it's also the behavior, culture, or psychological traits typically associated with one sex. So here we're going to have the State Department rewrite the law to change sex to gender and let people make up for themselves whatever they want to be. How can we have a rational conversation when we can't even agree on things like sex, on male and female? And just imagine, you're some poor schlub in another country, an American shows up and hands you your passport, and when it says sex, it shows Q or T or LMNOP. That makes the passport all but useless. But that's what we're coming to. When we've lost control of the language, when we let people manipulate the language to their own ends, this is what we have come to. And I blame no one but the American people, because we have sat back and watched it happen. And until we grow up, grow a backbone, and start standing up to these bullies with words, this is going to get worse and worse and worse. And one day you're going to wake up and your kids are going to ask you, how did all this happen? And if you're honest, you're going to have to look at them and say, well, it was mommy and daddy's fault. It was grandma and grandpa's fault. There's no one to blame but us. Now, America Out Loud Talk Radio plays on the iHeartRadio Network. You can also listen on our media player from any web browser anywhere in the world. We have the best in-class apps available on Apple, Android, and Alexa, where we stream 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Now, you can also hear these programs on podcast on those same apps.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends. Every day.